This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Gina Maffa, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
To Authenticity proudly supports the I Speak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit ispeakmedia.org. This is your first time here. Thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Episode 115 for March 23rd, 2021 features part two of my conversation with Gina Maffa. But before we get to that, I wanted to share something with you guys. I got some feedback a couple weeks ago from one of the guests that I had on the show. A friend of his reached out to him to give him feedback about our interview that she listened to and the effect that it had on her. And I was pretty happy to hear about it and wanted to be able to share it with you guys. So after talking to her, he connected me with her. And after having a couple conversations, she wrote a letter, which I told her that I would read at the beginning of the next episode. So I'm going to do that. Dear Tom, I'm writing this because I wanted to share with you that episode 78 with Michael DeMoli set a fire in my heart to quit drinking and live a sober life. Michael DeMoli is a friend from high school, and we lost touch during the college years. I reconnected with him in 2019, randomly coming out of an appointment in the same building complex where he was working at the time. Michael sent me this link to the podcast in which you interviewed him on July 21st, 2020. Unbeknownst to him, I was struggling that week. Well, it wasn't just that week. The last 2 years in Colorado had been a struggle. I had quit teaching due to burnout, ended a four-year relationship, and worked two jobs to, quote-unquote, stay afloat. I spent every penny I had on booze and edibles, that I rarely had enough money to pay rent. I lost my happiness, laughter, and joy to life. I had trouble sleeping, eating, I wasn't showering, and I was isolating myself more and more. I was drinking until I blacked out or passed out daily. Alcohol controlled every aspect of my life. In mid-March 2020, I decided to move back home to Ohio. I got rid of everything in my apartment, packed up what I could into my RAV4, and made the drive cross-country. With the pandemic in full force and the looming stay-at-home order, there was no hiding my drinking anymore. My parents didn't know what to do, and I certainly did not know. My parents' repetition of telling me to stop or slow down made me more angry, stubborn, and my desire to drink intensified. That particular evening that Michael sent the podcast link, I learned that a colleague from my master's program had passed away, and he was not much older than me. I was distraught, and I thought maybe he died from alcohol. I have no idea. I'm guessing because we did drink together on the weekends during our summer classes together. Over the past decade, I discarded my parents, siblings, and friends' comments with every intention of love and concern that they had about my drinking. The idea of sobriety did not sink in fully until I listened to your interview with Michael. You discussed helping clients during their darkest moment and shed a little bit of light on hope by being there and showing this person love, care, support at a time when they felt so alone. You were a part of this moment for me. Your words echoed in my head and spoke to my heart. My inner voice said at a volume setting of a whisper, "You can do this. Stop drinking." The voice became louder as the interview continued, saying, "You need to do this for yourself if you want any hope of living to see your 32nd birthday. You will die if you continue drinking. Do you want to end up like your aunt and cousin who didn't get help in time and succumb to their diseases?" Tom, you mentioned your sister, how she wanted to see you live a sober life and not die from this disease, because she had experienced enough to know how happy we can be if we just stop. She opened your mind to an idea of how your life could be. She planted a seed in your mind until you were ready to feel it, as you said. Michael discussed that the gains and growth in sobriety is a hard concept to understand, let alone show someone newly sober or starting day one. Michael was very honest in stressing that things will get worse before they get better, but it all takes time. Taking the time and being patient is essential in early sobriety. Michael said, "There is so much waiting for you in sobriety you can't even imagine," reflecting on his time in recovery. You continued to say that everything gets so much better. You wouldn't trade your sobriety for anything else. It's too good, and it affects everything. When the interview finished, my inner voice was now yelling, "The cycle ends now. It ends with you." At that moment in my heart, I decided and I felt at peace for the first time in a long time. This podcast episode gave me the courage to get started. I said to myself, "I'm going to quit drinking." If Michael and Tom can work through their addictions, getting help, support, and being committed, living a sober life, what's stopping me? I can do this. The future you will thank you, I said to myself. Why not take this precious moment in time and history of the pandemic to get sober? You cannot miss this opportunity because there will not be another one. I want to be a part of my soon-to-be-born nephew's or niece's life. I do not wish my drinking to affect this new aunt relationship or cause my strains on my relationships with others due to my drinking. I started my journey on July 31st, 2020. I reached out to my uncle and my therapist about an action plan to help me get sober. I'm close to 7 months of sobriety, and life has gotten so much better in this short amount of time. I was able to reconnect with my younger sister, who was on the receiving end of my drinking. She let me live with her and her roommates during the summertime because of my quote-unquote awesome perks of being a teacher, not knowing that I would be out of control. For 3 years, I put her through hell with my drinking, puking, hangovers, emotional outbursts, codependent manipulation, hooking up with her guy friends, and not being able to get home from the bar at 2 in the morning. As far as she was concerned, she was done with me, my empty words and promises. She told me that to be in her life, I needed to show her action on my end. She lives in Canada, and she came back to the States to see our nephew and spend the holidays with the family in November. For 2 months, she saw me going to my scheduled appointments with my therapist, working on my quote-unquote deeper work of healing old buried wounds, reading books about recovery, walking and calmly having conversations with her about recipes and nature. On New Year's Eve, when no one was around, she hugged me and whispered in my ear, "I'm proud of you." I replied, "Thank you." This moment would never have been possible if I was still drinking. We are continuing to work on a healthy sister-sibling relationship. I'm so thankful that Michael sent me this link, and I can listen to it and other episodes on your podcast when I'm having a tough day. This episode gave me the extra push that I needed to make for myself to get sober. Sincerely, Allison. So, you know, the reason I do this podcast is because I want people to have better lives. And I just want to thank Allison for taking the time and putting forth the effort to do that, for letting me know that this little project of mine has been meaningful to her. So anyway, Gina Maffa, such a pleasure to talk with her. Hope you enjoy the second part of our conversation. Gina Maffa.
You know, and admittedly, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of Joe Biden, but I do have a lot of faith in his good heart and the good people that he was able to put around him, thankfully. So,
well, so, he wasn't God willing. My first choice. Yeah, he wasn't my, but I do believe that he was the right person at the right time. I do believe that, you know?
Yeah, my father was very, very pro Joe Biden, and he's like, he's going to come through. And I'm like, he's got the lowest rating out of all of them, Dad, you know, and yet here we are, you know, he's like, my guy won. I wish I put a wager on you.
What did you think about Marianne Williamson?
I mean, I have a really complicated relationship with her. You know, I really love her work. Mm-hmm. But I think that when she got into politics, a lot of it became very egoic for her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't see her in this big of a role. I think the country's not in that place yet where we could talk about spirituality and the way that, and mix spirituality and politics the way that she does. Mm-hmm. That said, I respect her teaching so much. And I like her very. I used to see her all the time here in New York City. You know, and she would come and do her lectures every week.
Did you go to those at one? What?
I did. The church. Right? I can't think of it. I can't think of right now what I'm.
Have you studied the Course in Miracles?
I haven't formally studied it. I have the book. It is massive, and from time to time, I just open it up and read a passage. I get emails daily that have a passage in them. You know, it's a really good, it's good for me. I think it's obviously kind of dense, so you do have to study.
Yeah.
But I really think that it's a really comforting, you know, it's a beautiful teaching. I'm not making any sense. You can edit that part out. I'm not making any sense.
No, you're making sense. Come on.
I like A Course in Miracles. I've had a weird relationship with Marianne Williamson and when she entered politics in this way. That's all.
Yeah. It sounds like you just wish she hadn't.
I think it changes people, you know? And yeah, in that way I kind of do wish she hadn't. Yeah. But I obviously respect her passion and the pull towards it. You know, I think sometimes, you know, we think that our voice is going to be better in one place, but it could actually be better, you know, in different ways. And
well, I essentially agree with what you were saying about us being ready for something like that. I think that type of influence in politics is ultimately what we need.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're ready for it as a country. I wish we weren't
ready for a woman.
Right. Right. Yeah.
In general, a regular woman, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I am, but
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I agree. I think that's, And like a couple of the moments in the debates where she did the girlfriend thing or whatever, it just like, it didn't ring true to me.
Yeah. I think that's where I got lost with her. I think when she's in her flow and I can feel like she speaks a lot of really beautiful, strong, difficult truths, a lot of it on racism also.
Right.
And I'm there for it. I will show up for it. Do I think she's the teacher to speak about racism? I don't, but I do think that she's somebody to listen to. Mm-hmm. And I think however you can, I'm kind of in the band of, you know, wisdom is whatever works, however we can get a message across to people. And I felt like she did such a really good job of opening people's hearts and minds when she was doing lectures and with her books and with, you know, podcasts and that kind of thing. And I don't want to obviously minimize her work at all, but I did see a shift in her personality and the way that she would speak and kind of in her talking points in general. And I think she did have to sort of style flex around specific types of people, but it didn't ring authentic to me. So
to me, it felt like she was trying too hard.
Yeah. Well, I think she was, right?
Yeah.
She knows America is filled with people who don't know what A Course in Miracles is.
Right.
And, you know, they're just,
and when
not
they hear about
to
it, they're going
to
assume it's a cult or something. Right. I mean,
right. Meanwhile, a real life cult is out there and they're
right.
Totally. Yeah. I think that's what it was for me. It just, I just stopped being able to listen and I'm a listener to her. So, you know, I haven't listened to her now since the election.
Well, I've had other folks who in my life who kind of were not happy with how things went with her, you know, were kind of disappointed. But I'm a Course in Miracles guy, definitely. It's helped me in my life. And, I think the concepts around relationships to me are especially useful. You know,
I do agree with that. I think we get very caught up in our in clinging to our own ideals and our ideas and being right. And it leads a lot to disconnection. I completely agree.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Tom.
All right. So tell me about this book you're not writing.
Oh, goodness. Well, I have been writing, technically, it's sort of two books at once. At first I thought I wanted to sort of tell the story about grief in general, how a grief therapist got grief wrong. Right. I didn't really understand my grief process until I was going through it, you know, until it was too late. Almost. I was really sick. I needed insulin. I had thyroid disease. I mean, it was just, my body was falling apart because I was just going. I was continuing to be a therapist. I moved, you know, there were so many things happening and I just didn't stop to think that I had any needs. You know, I thought, you know, I'm a grief therapist. Like, I'm going to get grief right. I got it super wrong. And my body was there to tell me. It was an incredibly humbling and sobering experience. And so there were a lot of lessons along the way and a lot of healing that I had done, not just, you know, with my body, but really just appreciating the mother-daughter relationship in a totally different way. And so I had started writing about that, and then I realized that I was so bored by my story that I had to stop. Something was not aligned for me. I just needed something that was going to keep my own interest in my story, right? If I'm bored by it, how could somebody else not be? Mm-hmm. So I am revamping sort of the whole idea. And now it's more of a in-the-moment grief interactive with some story to it, right? Almost like a choose-your-own-adventure. Except, you know, instead of 25 ways, you know, to die, this is, you know, say 25 ways, you know, to the same ending, which is healing. And so we'll see how it all works out. But in the meantime, something more interesting came into my psyche, where I was just taking myself on a walk along the Hudson River and really just thinking about, you know, how to give back, how to find creative, you know, inspiration again. And almost out of nowhere, what popped into my mind was daily pep talks. And it was like, oh, I thought I'd do that on Instagram, right? Like, I'm not teaching anything necessarily on Instagram, but I'm reminding people of things on Instagram. I think we are a society of needing more reminders, right? I know I need to hear a lot of the same things again and again to get it right. So I started this endeavor, on the 1st of January, where I send people a daily pep talk over text message and email. They're different. Mm-hmm. And what I decided I wanted to do was create a pep talk book. And so that's actually what I have the most creative energy around right now, which is sort of pep talks and pick-me-ups in a grief-stricken world. And it's not love and light. It's not spiritual bypassing. It's really hard, dark, sticky tar pits of truth and how to navigate that. And so, so I'm working with someone, and the hope is that it all gets out. It all gets out on the paper. But there's a lot of energy behind it for me, which is unusual, you know, that this is like kind of plan B. Mm-hmm. But it feels really authentic to me. And so so we'll see how it goes. That's the hope.
So is it a daily reading sort of thing?
It can be. You know, that part hasn't been necessarily organized. But right now it's on themes. You know, say if it's on grief, mm-hmm. you know, if it's on, you know, pain-stricken anxiety and depression, you know, paralyzing sadness. It's on kind of on not being able to get out of bed, on feeling generally crappy. You know, it's kind of like these themes that I think people can turn to depending on how they're feeling. So it's not really an ideal person, right? It's an ideal feeling.
And it's so it could function like a reference book almost.
That's the hope. Or, you know, just in, it's so easy to feel isolated, especially because we have been isolated. And it's so easy, like, it's very hard to know how this will all play out when the pandemic is over. You know, in the Northeast, it's more paralyzing in a lot of ways because it's cold outside, right? So we can't, we're inside again pretty much indefinitely. And so it's been a really painful experience for so many, feeling so alone and so isolated that, you know, it's just really my hope that this could be kind of an I understand witnessing companion of a book. That is my hope.
That's beautiful.
Thanks, Tom.
So
we'll see how it goes. Hopefully it's guided in some way.
Well, like you said, sounds like you have a lot of energy around it. And, you know, one of the things I've learned about myself when it comes to stuff like this is, you know, I've gone for periods of years beating myself up because I haven't written a book yet. But finally realized I couldn't write the book that I needed to write because I wasn't the person who could write it yet.
Yeah.
I had to go through what I had to go through, and the things that I write now, I couldn't have written 15 years ago.
Mm.
So, and I think really, you know, when we're doing good and our heart's in the right place, that, you know, there's kind of a current that's like moving us along, and you'll end up at the right place in the right moment, writing the right book, you know?
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny with so few professions or so few hobbies or, you know, endeavors, writing is the one where you could get tripped up so easily, you know, self-doubt creeps in so easily, you know, and where if anyone said to me, like, you know, you're an okay therapist, but you're not great, I would be like, yeah, all right, that's great that you think that, like, best of luck to you, whatever, you know, but that's never what you want to hear when you put your whole heart into something. And, you know, and time, right? I write them all out one by one, you know, it's, and I pay for the monthly service that people can get that text message. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of my heart in there.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, to me, an incredibly vulnerable endeavor, more so even than singing, you know, it has the potential to really knock me off.
Yeah.
And, you know, knock me off whatever high pedestal I thought I had myself on.
Well,
in other ways, but yeah.
When I started to do this podcast, I have a friend and colleague up your way who's had a podcast for 3 or 4 years at this point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's saying, you got to do this and you got to do that. And, you know, you can't have it be any more than like 15 or 20 minutes long, because then people won't want to listen, and you have to have a call to action, and you got to,
I hear that a lot. Yeah.
About to explode. And I just thought, no, that's not what I want to do. That's not what I want to do. And, you know, I haven't always been that way in my life, but that's the way I am now. And, you know, my conclusion and the place I have come from is that maybe she won't want to listen to my podcast. Maybe a lot of people won't want to listen to it, but I will find my people.
Mm.
And that's right, what I think about your pep talks. That's what I think about your pep talks. You know, it's good. You know, it's good. You wouldn't do it if it wasn't good. Well, I mean, it's helpful.
Absolutely. And that's really what it's for. It's for the people who don't have a therapist, who can't afford it or don't have the resources for other reasons. It's for people who have a therapist but still need some reminders every day.
Right.
Whether that they can, or that even if they can't, they're still okay.
Mm-hmm.
And cared about. And, you know, I think that's it, right? And in the end of it, it's an authentic caring and wanting to be with someone in it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, in the midst of feeling alone, maybe feeling a little bit less so.
Well, and so, and, you know, the thing is, you come through on your Instagram feed. Like, I really got a sense of who you are as a human being, and having this conversation with you followed suit.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah. So
it's hard.
The whole point is connection, right?
It is. It really is. I think that you could be really great at marketing. You know, there are sometimes, you know, social media can get the best of us, even therapists who help people to feel like they're not less than, but you could still, you know, do that compare and despair. But it really is, you know, I could look at other therapists' sites and I'm like, oh, they've got, you know, 42,000 followers and 600 likes, you know, but they're just posting the same videos over and over and over again without real, like, here's 5 tips to
most deal therapists with your midlife crisis. I know have never been on Instagram, like, or have no idea how to use it, you know?
Well, that's good.
Probably, oh, I have an Instagram, but I've never used it before. That's that. Yeah, no, I mean, come on. You're like light years ahead. You're doing great. So, and
thank you, Tom.
So speaking of your pep talks, that's a bold thing for someone to do, to make a commitment to send people a pep talk every day. I mean, that's admirable. Like, I wanted to support you. That's part of the reason why I did it. Also, just to, you know, from a observational standpoint, to, you know, what you're doing and how it's going, and, you know, because I'm trying to figure out stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when you put yourself out there in these ways and you hope that you're helping people and also that it makes some kind of difference, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the same time, it's, you know, it's like the same thing, like what I want to give back, and it isn't, it just has to happen. So, and also look, it could fall flat on its face, you know, but the hope is that it doesn't, because people want to open it up and have some kind words or kind reminders. That's the hope.
Well, you know, here's how I look at it. If you help one person, it's worth it, right? That's the point, right?
So true. Yeah.
Yeah. And
that is, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing it reminded me of is, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine about this like relationship thing that was like stupid, you know, and, but it was a relationship that I kept dipping my toes in, and it never got off the ground, and it went on off and on for a couple of years. Very mm-hmm. painful. And, yeah. you know, so I'm talking to one of my buddies about it. And he's someone I confided in about this stuff. And, you know, one night we're at dinner and I was talking to him about this. And, you know, I remember going to the bathroom and looking in the mirror, and everything he said about it was like negative, you know?
Oh, no.
And just like picking apart, you know, the relationship, and it just hit me like, this is somebody who's been married and divorced 3 different times. Like, why am I talking to him about this? Why yeah. am I talking to anybody about this? I know what I want to do. I know what I'm gonna do. What reason yeah. do I have to even go to somebody else? To do I, you know, what do you need validated, Tom? Like, what's, and I stopped doing that stuff. You know, now
I love it.
It's like, if I want to share that part of my life with somebody, or if I actually, like, I have dad friends who I talk to about dad stuff, you know, I mean, there's that, mm-hmm. but otherwise, like, I don't need somebody to like validate what I'm doing, or I don't need a lot of feedback about my personal life. Like, I'm, and it's just believing in oneself, right? Mm-hmm. We have what we need.
We do have what we need. And it's that clumsy humanity
yeah.
where it could really, that it just takes 1 second of doubt, almost of like putting your guard down.
Yeah.
And questioning something. It just takes 1 second.
And that energy just destroys it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's yeah, probably, you know, and part I'm of so where you're excited. Getting hung up with the writing stuff.
I have to find myself a therapist to talk about it with. But it is funny how you just have this 1 minute, you know, this 1 second, and then you allow something in.
This is, you know, a lesson I learned in life. Just people shit on our dreams. Right?
That's wisdom right there.
I mean, people do.
People do.
And
so true.
You know, I mean, usually when that happens, it's never the person who followed their heart and lived happily ever after and did exactly what they wanted to do. It's the person who hates their job or hates their marriage or whatever. You know, it's never the fulfilled person who is discouraging you.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, even if your daily things are bad or your writing isn't any good, it's going to lead you down the path that you need to find, and you're going to end up where you need to be, and you're going to find what you're supposed to be doing. So why would I want to get in the way of that? Why wouldn't I just encourage you?
Right? Well, that's wisdom right there. Yeah, absolutely. That's what we do. We encourage people to go find their own truth on their journey.
Yeah.
Because eventually, you know, it's kind of like therapy, right? You think you're going in for one thing and you leave with five other things healed. Mm. And, you know, that is the hope with all of this. And, you know, I think, look, you know, honesty is just saying, you know, people who have training and years under their belt of understanding human behavior and having the tools, coping mechanisms, and, you know, inner resources can still have moments of doubt too. That can be sometimes debilitating. And I think that's just humanity, right? We're just clumsy.
Yeah.
We're just doing the best we can at any given moment. It's so many things. We're so susceptible to being kind of blown over in the wind sometimes, you know, and it really can depend on so many different things. But if you're just having this one moment of self-doubt and just the right boxer comes into your ring, you're down for the count. Yeah. And, you know, maybe that's the journey too. Maybe the journey is getting up after being knocked down and not winning, you know? And so, and that's all good, right? It's all okay. No matter what it is, it's all okay. But it is an interesting, sometimes painstaking journey, you know, to getting somewhere and not being attached to the results, but being more attached to the journey itself and the lessons therein. But it's been hard. It's been hard. This writing journey has been the ultimate noble adversary for me.
So, well, I mean, you know, you obviously are well educated. I mean, have you taken specific writing classes, or have you had instruction around that? Yeah, you've done all that.
Yeah, you know, it's really just the emotional part of it, right? You know, I think that the words come, the notions that you're looking for come when you're not tied up, when you're not in your ego, when you're not in self-doubt, and when you're just in the flow. And I have that a lot. I do have a flow a lot. It's just, you've caught me on a week where I don't have it.
What?
And I think that's so great. You did. And I love it. I love it. It's so good, right? Because it makes it juicier, right? I'm human. So I could have all this confidence in these other ways, but, you know, I'm going to get back up again, Tom.
Oh, of course.
I'm going to keep on writing, you know, I'm going to keep on going.
Well, you're going to find where you need to be. You know, another story with the development of this podcast is, you know, it started as a blog, and I've always written, so I was going to write, and there's a certain type of writing that I really like to do, like a personal essay type of thing. But it, you know, it's the sort of thing that the spirit I can't just magically make it appear. It's, you know, it's deeper than that. It's, you know, and so, okay, so I can't write that stuff every day. So what am I going to do in between? And I started thinking about how much I love art and music and writing, and, you know, well, maybe I'll like curate some sort of thing. Maybe I'll interview people, 'cause I always liked writing about people and, felt like I was pretty good at that. And so I'll interview people. And so I met an artist who actually, you know, is a student of the course. Her name is Mimi Langla, and she's a pretty decorated artist. So I interviewed her. I asked her if I could write a story about her. And I sat with her twice, and I interviewed her, and I recorded it on my iPhone. And months went by, and I kept saying to myself, you know, I need to write this. I need to write this. And what, you know, something was keeping me from doing it. And you know, at one point somewhere in here, a friend of mine had just texted me one morning saying, hey, have you ever thought about doing a podcast? And, you know, at that point I had considered it, but not seriously. And, you know, but then I started to think about, well, okay, but I need to figure out what I would do with it. Okay. And now side by side. Okay. So here's Mimi, who I'm talking to and I've interviewed, and months go by and I haven't written it. And it clicked. I don't want to write it. I want to speak it.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm going to do with the podcast. And it came together. You know, I figured it out, but I had all this inner turmoil about it. You know, I mean, and I didn't have to, because I would have figured it out, you know, so I would have figured it out anyway. But yeah, we just do a number on ourselves, I think.
Me too.
Do you ever use mantras? Have you tried that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, like I could do it all, right? Like, it's actually worse when you have all the tools. It's worse when you have self-awareness and these moments come in a way, because you're more willing to say, yeah, I know what to do. I know how to do it. I've got the tools. But somehow or another, you're making a conscious choice to stay in the sticky tar pit.
I don't know if it's for
it's kind of what it feels like, right? Like you're trying to walk through it, but it's dark and gooey, and it's, you know, you can walk, but it's really laborious and painful and gross. And the process, that's sort of what it feels like, you know, the process of, you know, talking yourself through things at times, right? I meditate every day. You know, I'm really big on mantras, on can chant, you know, I'll sing them. Mm-hmm. I have some of them in places I can find them and, you know, or see them readily. And yet I'll look at it and I'll laugh, you know, like, oh, how cute you and your little mantras.
Oh my gosh, what a critic that is.
I know.
That's your sarcastic somebody. Who was that in your life? Who was that? Who did that?
Nobody did, to be honest with you. It just is. I have always been my hardest critic. I have always been, you know, and I don't know if I thought my parents were too easy on me. Maybe that's why, you know, but I remember being really bad in math and my mom would be like, that's so great. You got a 65 on your test. It's amazing. You passed it. I'm so happy for you. What do you want for dinner tonight? You know, and so how wonderful to have loving parents. I'm so grateful for that. But, you know, there was also a kind of a like, aren't you going to push me a little bit harder in this way?
So you had to come up with that muscle on your own.
I did. And boy, it is strong. It is strong. But what's great is that I can recognize that in other people right away. I can hear that little inner voice, that saboteur right away. And I think it definitely helps me to help other people when I can recognize it instantly, because then I work with that voice.
Yeah. Well, and it helps you see yourself too. That's the other part.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're all mirrors to each other, right? So
yeah.
I can see that in myself. So I think it's important to just note, you know, So that's where I'm at, Tom. That's the life of Gina. That's the path I'm on to authenticity.
All right. So looking back on this journey, when was a time when the younger Gina needed some support or a word of advice? When would that have been? What was going on? And what would you go back and say to her, knowing what you know now?
I can't think of a specific experience right now, but I think that, you know, for so many years of my life, young Gina was so hard on herself. And, you know, even though was, say, popular in school and had all the things she wanted, she felt very alone and very different from people. You know, I wanted to know, like, why is this blade of grass? Like, we cut it so violently, but it still grows. I was fascinated and, you know, felt very different. And I think that instead of celebrating that difference, and I, you know, I grew up Catholic and all of that. So guilt was a big thing. Rules and following them were a big thing. You know, I as loving as my parents were, I wasn't necessarily urged to be different or to think differently. So I think that I would say, you know, that it's okay to be who you are and think what you think and to not, you know, to not judge yourself for feeling different. I just think that it's so easy to feel so isolated as a kid so quickly when you think differently from others in your community or, you know, group of friends and all of that. And it can really lead you down a path of feeling self-conscious more often and just having that self-doubt creep in, you know, when you're at the top of your top of your career doing great things and you have a moment where you feel really crap. And not, and by the way, I don't have just one moment of feeling crap. It's, I'm human, right? So it comes, but I,
like two
but
a day, I think having, so we're talking about
maybe it depends on the week, right? But, you know, I think for sure it's really just, I wish that I could have had someone there to say, you know, celebrate your thoughts, your questions. Those are the questions you should be asking as a kid, you know, like, what are we doing here? How do we make our life worthwhile? Like, here's like 6-year-old Gina. You know, I was five. I remember being five and it was my birthday, my fifth birthday, and looking at all the presents at my birthday party and looking around at my friends there, you know, friends jumping in the pool. And I was like, wow, I can't believe that I'm already five. I can't believe that I'm 5 years old already. And look at all of the people that I have in my life at five. You know, I didn't care about the presents or like the cake and all of that. I was so astonished that I had made it to 5 years old.
Wow. That's so interesting.
It just was kind of always my thing, right? I could like look outside of myself like, wow, I can't believe I'm five. I can't believe I made it. You know, it's just funny. I just wish I had celebrated that a little bit more instead of pushing that part down.
Well, you can celebrate that now, can't you?
Indeed. Indeed, I do.
Well, and I appreciate you celebrating it with us and telling your story. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for creating a platform and the space for people to really, truly be. To tell their stories, their journeys, but also the truth and share the humanity. And it's really rare. So I'm truly appreciative. Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, we're friends now. So
we are.
Anytime you want to come back, I mean, you know, the books, whatever, you know.
Yes, I mean, it's going to happen. You're motivating me. But well, I'm so glad we did this. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's been really nice.
So it's so helpful. Like, just I didn't really know you.
Yeah,
but well, I mean, you know,
you have a warmth. I mean, it's not like it didn't feel awkward at all.
No, it didn't. You know, and you have a way about you that, you know, all I say is like what I say to my clients is show up and tell me the truth.
Right.
And so, you know, in a way, I'm, you know, that's I owe it to my own life to do that. So. And thank you for asking me on so that we could do that.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what this will all sound like, especially because in the beginning I was like, I imagine that your parents were like that. You're like, in fact, it was quite the opposite.
Well, you know,
what a shitty therapist you are.
No. I saw it more as a compliment because, you know, I come across as a well-balanced person and that's not how I started out, you know?
You do come across as well-balanced and also so gentle, you know?
Oh, thank you.
So, and that's really, there's such a calmness, a gentleness. Your clients must be so lucky, but must love meeting with you.
Well, this is all the, you know, for a long time, I was really reluctant to do what I do at its fullest expression because I don't have a bunch of letters behind my name, you know, and I'm among so many people. And really, until I had this last therapist who is a teacher of the course, who, you know, she has a doctorate, you know, she's written a couple books. She,
amazing.
She's psychoanalytically trained. I mean, she's got this array of experience and training, and she's like, you need to be seeing people privately and you're not charging enough.
I love it. You know? Yeah.
And I'm like, but, and she's like, I don't care. You're good at this. You know, you, it doesn't matter, and do what you got to do, call it coaching, whatever. And so I started doing that. And a lot of what I do is, one of the things I really like to do is coach parents into getting their kids into treatment.
Oh my God. I could have used you back in the day.
Yeah. Well,
now I know.
Yeah. So I do that. I mean, and really I haven't even promoted it. It's all word of mouth from former clients that I've gotten that kind of business. And really how it plays out is it's like it's an alternative to intervention, you know,
I love that.
And, you know, it costs a lot less. I have them pay me a retainer and, you know, at the end of 4 or 5 hours, if you feel like this isn't going where you want it to, then we can just stop, you know?
Yeah.
But if you want me to keep helping you, I can do that too. And, if they want, I'll stay involved all through the treatment episode and the aftercare planning and help with all that stuff. And, you know, like I'll sometimes a year later, you know, I'll have a dad call me and say, yeah, he's asking me to give him money for this. Do you think it's a good idea? And, you know, I'll talk him through it. And yeah. So, and then the other thing is, just as a sober guy, I mean, I've never really been the guy to sponsor somebody brand new and take them through 12 steps. I mean, I've started to, but what I've really been more is the guy who people who've been sober a little bit longer come to when things start getting wonky in their relationships.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Which is inevitable.
And that does.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
And that's... So, yeah, so I end up like coaching and, you know, one of the things that I was really, reluctant to write a Psychology Today profile for myself. Like, what the hell am I going to say? And I gave it a lot of time and I finally felt comfortable with what I wrote after sitting with it and whatever I wrote, like, I'll have guys call me and say, my girlfriend saw you and she said, I got to talk to you. You know, that kind of stuff. It's really funny. Like I
love that.
I connect with people on there. And so, yeah, I get a little business from there. And then I have an agency that's based in Detroit that I do some contract work for, like case management and coaching. And so I have a, you know, a little caseload with them. And, you know, this podcast has been a couple years now, going on 2 years, and it's been sponsored a good portion of the time.
Oh, that's great. Congratulations. Yeah. That's really huge.
So, now, there's a really trauma focused addiction program outside of Milwaukee called The Manor.
And, I don't know that one.
Yeah. And I've had the director on.
You're reaching across the divides.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I'm going to send you some stuff I wrote where I'm kind of at right now. There you have it, Gina Maffa. I really appreciate her investing so much time in this, and glad I reached out to her. Definitely happy to have her in my life. It's one of the real blessings of this podcast that I just didn't expect for my life to be so enriched by people like Gina. So, you can find the podcast on Amazon, Apple, Breaker, Google, Listen Notes, Overcast, Pandora, Patreon, Podbay, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Public, Spotify, Stitcher, eventually on YouTube, and I'm sure a lot of other places that I'm not even aware of. If you enjoy listening to the show, please take the time to leave a rating or a review, preferably at Apple Podcasts. That's where we get the most mileage. Podchaser is another great place, but really wherever you listen, whatever it enables you to do, whether it's leaving 4 stars, 5 stars, whatever, or you can leave a narrative review. Please do that. If you know someone who would enjoy this episode or the podcast in general, please send them a link. Every little bit helps. If you have questions or comments, you can call 561-247-4757 to leave a voice message. I'd love to hear from you, value any input you have to offer. For early access to this and every episode and for other supplemental content, you can support the show on Patreon for as little as $1 a month right now. That's patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. Their songs are used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Thank you to our sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery. Thank you to Wendy Chin at Equivox, who's been just such a great support for me and so helpful. And the Path to Authenticity is also proud to support the iSpeak Media Foundation. Check us out, thepathtoauthenticity.com. You can email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. So thank you again to Gina. Thanks again so much to Allison for taking the time to write that letter and giving me permission to share it with the audience. Hope you guys have a great week. Be nice. I died on the
Hey, we need a guitar player.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.